is to get a proper concept of God. Some of us have spent years studying about God. Other men have spent hundreds of years studying about God. And we still don't fully understand God. Even the great apostle Paul, who was inspired, said in the 11th chapter of Romans, "Oh, the depths of the riches both of the wisdom and the knowledge of God, how unsearchable are His judgments and His ways past finding out. For who hath known the mind of the Lord, or who hath been His counselor? Or who hath first given to Him, and it shall be recompensed to Him again? For of Him, and through Him, and to Him are all things, to whom be glory forever. Amen." We will never understand all there is to know about God. God never intended for me to fully understand it while I'm here. As Brother Rick brought out, if we understood it all while we were here, what would we have to look forward to? I am waiting for the day that my mind can explode, that I can explore all those things that I don't know about God and I wish I knew. I think that will happen, but not while I'm here. God did intend, however, that we search after Him, as He says in the book of Acts, that we should seek the Lord if haply we might feel after Him and find Him, though He be not very far from any one of us. Do you really feel God is here today?
Amen.
Is He sitting next to you? Is He sitting behind you, sitting in front of you? Or is He sitting in you?
In
us. For He that is in us is more than he that is in the world. God is in us, for in Him we live and move and have our being. So we are expected to press toward the mark of understanding Him. Press toward the mark and forget those things that are behind. But reach forth to those things that are before us. No matter what your intelligence, if you are an 80 IQ, if you're a 300 IQ, you will still have something to reach for when you've studied the Bible all your life. You will still be an ignoramus when it comes to knowing God. God is what is beyond all of us put together and is certainly beyond all of us individually. Now perhaps you wonder why I'm starting out with God, when I'm supposed to be talking about the devil. The second greatest challenge, I believe, to the human mind is to understand the devil and how he operates. Why? Because he's the second greatest force in the world next to God. Do you know that the devil is bigger than all of us in here put together? He has more power, he has more influence, he has more of everything than all of us put together. We couldn't lick the devil if all of us ganged up on him. Because next to God, he's most powerful. For like God, though he be not very far from every one of us. Where is the devil? Is he sitting beside you? Is he sitting behind you? Is he sitting in front of you? Or is he inside of you? For in us he lives and moves and has his being. In God we live and move and have our being. But in us the devil lives and moves and has his being. Don't think of the people outside today And during these next 2 weeks, we're not going to be thinking about the people outside. We're going to be talking about us, you and me. Most of us Christians, I trust. Most of us believers in God. But don't fool yourself. In us, the devil lives and moves and has his being. Paul encourages us not to be terrified, however, about our adversary, but to stand fast in one spirit, with one mind, striving together for the faith. But we can't afford to be ignorant of his devices. You know, when we went to fight World War II, when America got into the fight, perhaps we spent more time studying the enemy than we did studying our own resources. If you don't know the enemy, you won't win the war. We knew the enemy, and we knew him inside and out. We would like to have known more. But we would have never won the war without intelligence and what it gave us in that war. And so I believe that if you and I don't know the devil and know his tactics, are not able to comprehend when he's after us, when he has us, and when he's got us, or when he's getting us, there's something wrong. We're blind and can't see afar off, aren't we? We can't afford to be ignorant of his devices, lest he get an advantage of us. Do you think the devil would take advantage of you? In what way do you think the devil takes advantage of you? Anybody got an idea? How could the devil take advantage of you? How did he take advantage of Eve? Did he deceive her? 1 minute Eve said, "I know what God said and I can quote it." And the next minute she was doing exactly the opposite, wasn't she? We can't afford to be ignorant of his devices, lest any of us be led away with the deceitfulness of riches. Do you think anybody here is deceived by riches? I know they are. I know they are. I'm one of them. Have you ever lied to make a buck? If you did, you were led away by the deceitfulness of riches. Oh, you say, just a buck. What can a buck do for you? A buck can lose your soul, can it? We can't afford to be ignorant of his devices, lest any of us learn to blaspheme, as did Hymenaeus and Alexander, and be delivered to Satan because our faith was shipwrecked. Do you know any shipwrecked faith? I do. People who used to be here and aren't here any longer. What happened? They hit a storm and they couldn't ride it out, could they? What happened? Satan got a hold of them, didn't he? They didn't even know the storm was coming up. They didn't even know they were in danger. Reminds me of the time of the people in Noah's time. It said that they were marrying and giving in marriage, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow that we die, and the flood came upon them and washed them all away before they knew what happened. You think that could happen to you? Steve, do you think that could happen to you? I know it can happen to anybody here. Your faith can be shipwrecked. We can't afford to be ignorant, lest there be in any of us an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. And I see this every day in my experience as a Christian, in myself and in others. How far do I go when I depart from the living God? How far is away? It's about like the forsaking of Christ. It says on the night he was betrayed that they all forsook him. How many times did they forsake him? One time. Not 20 times in 1 year. If you forsook the assembling of yourselves together 20 times in 1 year, you don't have a very good attendance record, do you? What if you forsake it once? Just once. You intentionally, you deliberately forsake it. Is that going away from Christ because of unbelief? We can't afford to be ignorant of the devil's tactics, lest any of us be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. Do you know that my sin isn't nearly as bad as your sin, Rick? Not half as bad as yours. I can procrastinate. I can take it away. You know, I can even rationalize away stealing from somebody. I can rationalize that away. Till it doesn't even hurt. And the devil claps his hands and he says, "Ha, ha, ha, I got him that time." And he says to God, "Ha, ha, ha, what a servant you've got. If I don't get anything else across this morning, I want to get this point across, that you are in danger from the devil. We're going to be exploring some of the things, some of the ways that he works on us. So we're told to be sober and serious about our business, to be vigilant, watching, preparing, and praying. For your adversary. He's again you. What did Jesus say? Can I be on the fence? Can he be neutral? Couldn't the devil be neutral? No, he's always your adversary. He's always against you. Jesus said there's no such thing as being a neutral in religion. You can't say, well, it really doesn't make any difference to me. It does make a difference. The fact that you don't make it a difference makes a difference. So your adversary, the devil, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. We can't afford to be ignorant of his devices, lest he devour us, swallow us up. And he's not picky about taste. He doesn't care whether it's chocolate, whether it's lemon, or strawberry, or plain old vanilla like most of us. He likes all four flavors. And he's looking for you. He's looking for me. He's not looking for people in the world. He's looking for you and me. He already has people in the world. His favorite meal is one of the elite, you might say. Nothing pleases him more than a betrayer like Judas. One of the 12, he was numbered with the apostles. And oh, what a prize. That would have been like capturing General Patton in World War II for our side, for the German side, wouldn't it? If he can pick off one of the inner circle, that's the plum. Nothing he likes better than an elder who speaks perverse things to draw away disciples after him. Why? Because he gets the man and he gets all those disciples who come after him, doesn't he? He doesn't have to get the other 25 or 50. If he gets the leader, he's got you all, hasn't he? If he's really the leader. We can come to know God, but it's more difficult to know the enemy. It's harder to know the devil than it is to know God. Because He's our adversary. Although he is the adversary, he looks like something else, doesn't he? How many of you think that the devil is dressed up in a red suit and has horns and a long tail? If he's smart, he's the best looking guy in this crowd. If he's smart, he's the most polished person in this room. If he's smart, he is the one that can twist you around his little finger. And don't think there aren't people sitting out there, some of you, that can just twist me around your little finger. And you can twist others around your little finger. Either by your advantage, by your intelligence, or by your cleverness. It can be done. I know it can be done. Do you know one time I went to talk to a lady over at Perry, Iowa? She was a little old lady that, I suppose she must have been 75 years old at least, hard of hearing, lonely, a widow. I went to her house and to sell her an insurance policy. You know what I ended up doing? I'll give you three guesses, and the first two don't count. She had a china cupboard full of beautiful china. I admired her china. And before we were done, I'd bought half of what was in her china closet, and she had me up on a stool in her kitchen digging things out of her upper cupboard. You know, that scares me, because I could twist her around my finger and get what I wanted. And I thought at the time, and I thought since, you know, that's just the way the devil does me. He gets me in a place where he wants me. He gives me something that I want very much, and he twists me around his little finger. You see, he doesn't have to appear as the devil. He doesn't wear a name tag, "I'm a devil." Did you ever see anybody who was a devil that wore a name tag, "I am a devil," like Jerry's got up here, "I am not a basketball player. Don't ask me about it." He's advertising. The devil comes to us like an angel of light. And you know that any one of us three up here this morning, Rick could be a devil. Dwayne is a devil. Well, he's got his tie off now. He's improving. Dwayne could be a devil. I could be a devil. Don't you trust me? Because I just might be the devil's agent. This week I'm going to take you into some meetings of our society, the devil's society. And you see if you don't find yourself in those meetings. He's hard to come by because he's hard to understand because he doesn't look like what he is. One time I saw a picture of a soldier in Vietnam going down the street with his machine gun in his hand. And here sits a little bitty baby, about like Stephen Kimber's baby. It's crying its eyes out, dirty, ugly, all alone, sitting in the middle of the road, crying. That soldier, like the good American heart that he had, felt sorry for that poor baby. He was hungry. He picked him up and blew him to bits. You know why? They had planted a booby trap under that baby. They knew Americans are soft-hearted. The devil isn't beyond that either. The devil would even use a baby to deceive you if he could get your soul. He might use our best friend. Oh, you say you shouldn't be skeptical about your friends. Oh, you shouldn't? You shouldn't beware of your friends. Do you know friends rub off? They rub off on each other. Do you know I had a friend that used to use a byword, and before I knew it, I was using the same byword? Talking about your byword Sunday, Jay. Oh, your friends have a lot to do with you. And they just might be his agent. He could get to you through your friends, couldn't he? Let me tell you the story about the man who had a friend. The man who had a friend, the best friend that he had probably, maybe. And he told this friend, you know, I've got a big trial coming up. You know what they're going to do to me? They're going to take me and deliver me over to the Gentiles. That would be the worst thing that could ever happen to a person if you were a Jew. And they're going to take me and they're going to give me a mock trial and they're going to nail my hands to a cross and they're going to put a spear in my side and they're going to kill me. And his friend said, oh, no, they're not. Over my dead body they are. I think this is the hardest thing that Jesus ever said. He gave Peter the soundest dressing down any man ever got. Get thee behind me, Satan. Thou art an offense to me. Would you tell your friend that, your best friend? If he tried to talk you out of doing something that was good, something that was rewarding, he tried to talk you out of it, would you say to him to his face, or would you wait and say it later, do you know you're a devil, you're trying to talk me out of something good? Now get behind me, I don't want to hear it, you offend me. Thou art an offense to me, for thou savorest not, you just don't understand. And you're almost totally ignorant of what God's trying to do. I wonder if we have those kinds of eyes when we are dealing with our friends. Who are your friends? People sitting next to you. Did you ever have a brother in Christ talk you out of doing something good? You wanted to do it, you wanted him to go along, or you just told him about it and he talked you out of it before you got out of the room. The next time that happens, will you think about this? Don't call him a devil, because that would be judging him. But just remember that even your best friends can work for the devil. You're letting your feelings rule over your know-how and good sense, Jesus said. Deuteronomy 29 and 29 says, the things which are revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may do all the works of this law. God's told us all he wants us to know about himself. Likewise, he's told us all we need to know about the devil. God has told us all we need to know about the devil. The only difference is that God always plays by the same rule. The devil can change the rules, can he? Because he's not restricted to just the truth. He can lie, he can cheat, he can deceive, he can do anything to get his will across. But we know about it, don't we? We already know about it because God has told us. It's kind of strange, the progression of the revelation of the devil by God throughout the Testament. You know, in the Old Testament, we realize that the devil's there, don't we? He exists, but it's pretty vague. We really can't get a good picture of the devil from the Old Testament. I think Job probably stands all alone in telling us how the devil operates on a person who was trying to follow God under the patriarchal law. Job's test. It's the first time we have a mention of the devil as an adversary of man that I know of. But you want to notice in Job, we'll look at Job a little bit later, you want to notice in Job that the devil is always in the second position. He's never on top. Never. All the power he had was given him by God, and the limits of that power were made by God, weren't they? All the terror that he struck into Job's heart, or he failed to strike into Job's heart and into the other people's heart he struck it, was controlled, could be controlled. His restrictions were on Job's outward person, not on his inward person. The existence and the nature of Satan remained in the background through all the New Testament. He was felt, but he wasn't understood. But in the New Testament, he brings it plainly forward to us so that we can see him without any of his varnish, can't we? Look in the fourth chapter of the book of Matthew. Third chapter, I'm sorry. No, it's the fourth. Fourth chapter of the book of Matthew. Jesus was led up of the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted of the devil. And when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, he was afterward hungered. When the tempter came to him, he said, "If thou be the Son of God, command that these stones be made bread." And he answered and said, "It is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God." And then you know the rest of the story. He tempted him in all points like we are tempted. Yet Jesus had a reply. He had a comeback. He had a defense against everything the devil threw at him. But this story isn't just put in here to tell us about Jesus. The story is put in here to tell us about us. He will throw everything he's got at you, too. He'll use any means he can to get at you. And usually attacked you at your weakest point, like he did Jesus here. If you went 40 days without a meal, I expect some of you are already thinking about dinner, aren't you? It's only going to be about 20 minutes till dinner. And our stomachs are already telling us it's time to eat. But think of going 40 days without food. Then we would know how Jesus felt when the devil said, "If you are the Son of God." A doubt. "Then why don't you make these stones bread?" Could Jesus make the stones bread? He does every day. He makes the stones bread, doesn't he? The devil is put before us in the experience of the apostles and prophets and early Christians, the records we have of it, how he attacked them from all directions in any way to get an advantage. So number one is how he tested the Lord. That was his biggest battle, was the Lord. If he could have gotten Jesus to submit to him and fall down and worship him, none of us would need to be here today. It would be a futile effort. But because Jesus stood fast and firm, we are here and we love him because he stood fast and firm in his temptation. But we don't know what temptation is or trials are. I'm sure that Duane will get into it in the church today compared with the church of the first century. But God gives us a picture of how the devil works in our lives, and if we know those stories well enough, we know how God will work today. Between people, among congregations, among the brotherhood, we know how God will work if we know those stories well enough. And of course, through the teachings. Satan has two ways, I believe, that he uses two modes of operation. Number one, he slanders God to man. What's slandering?